Well, everybody who's listening to this needs to be especially jealous because Verlan has got me all to herself today. Or maybe you actually pity her because she's got me all to herself.
Oh. I'm the lucky one, guys.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so our usual agenda, we'll go ahead and go through it, you know, and talk about your week. We'll go through the presentation. We'll kind of have any discussion, you know, about it as we go along, like usual. We'll review the homework, and then we'll go ahead and close. Somebody else just joined.
Hello, it's Hugo.
Hey,
hello,
Hugo.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a bit late.
Did you ever sleep?
I don't know what happened. I think something like that. I pressed the button of the unwittingly of the what do you call it? The alarm clock. And but I woke up myself.
Yep. Glad you're here.
Yeah, I know Verlan was going to have to deal with me all on her own. She's really glad you're here. Well, I had just barely turned on the recording before you joined, Hugo, and was just reviewing tonight's agenda.
So, okay, that's good.
So we can go ahead and jump into it. Who would like to go first and talk about how your week was?
Maybe I should go. I had a bit of a rough week because, as you know, about the court thing that happened on Monday, and I thought, you know, it wasn't going to be that bad and whatever, but I don't know, it still affects you, and you know, I think the tornado thing happened again, but I think after that, I think I was able to recover. I was able to recover sooner, and which was good. So, I think I can't say this is the roughest week, but it was actually, I wouldn't say this is my best week so far, but I'm still there, you know. So, yeah, I think on the one side, I feel, you know, you feel that things have come to an end, and which is good. But on the other side, I don't know, you still, the letting go thing is still difficult, you know. It's just, you have mixed feelings, and it's difficult. It's just, but as I'm here, I think I'm in good spirits. The one I sent you guys that poem. I was in the car, and then I listened over the radio, and I heard this poem, and it was in my native language. And then I thought, my goodness, you can possibly even translate this thing to English, because I listened to it, and I had such a laugh because it's such a silly little poem, but you know, then I just realized, you know, you can actually be creative in a lot of ways, and words are just one of them. Language is just one of them, that's why I sent it to you, and I hope you also had a little bit of a laugh.
You did.
Yeah, but anyway, after that, I realized, look, you just need to, you know, look what you are thinking about again, you know, and then I realized, okay, there's a lot of things that, and obviously after that I went through the, I went through the chapter that I had to read, and then I saw, okay, when I made the list, look, there's actually a lot of things that, you know, I can be glad about, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, at the end, everything turned out better. So, here I am. Luckily, I didn't miss the whole session. I'm very glad. My subconscious probably woke me up tonight. But, okay. So, here I am.
You go on and... I want to ask you something. What about the custody of your children? Who is the primary parent, or how have you worked that out? You are?
I am. I told my wife she wants a divorce. I want to have the custody, and because we've agreed on that. And, you know, that's one thing that's very strange to me. Normally, you know, that's one thing that I found very strange, because normally one of the strongest, I cannot say feelings or you know is the mother instinct, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't touch a mother's children, eh? So, if I was such a bad father or something like that, she, you know, and I only realized that afterwards. You know, why did she agree to that so quickly, you know?
Mm.
Why? It's as if it's a burden that's gone from her to me, that sort of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She didn't even fight about that aspect.
Hmm. Now, does she get
access to them, you know, every second weekend. The agreement states that they can, obviously the children that are, the oldest one is not, how can I say, a minor anymore, so he can make his own decision, he can make his own, up his own mind where he wants to be, you know, that sort of thing. But the other two are still minors, so they are bound by the court ruling, or by the agreement.
So they live with you during the week? They live with you during the week?
They live with me, and then... every second weekend, then, you know, she can, they visit her, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. You're lucky. I'm not the main parent. And that's really hard. I'm so happy
to hear. I'm sorry to hear that, but I think the only thing you can do is to make sure that, you know, that the communication channels between you and them are always open, you know.
Right, right.
And
I have good relationships with my kids, but I miss seeing them more.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, it must be hard. I think that's one of the things that's positive out of this whole thing, is that I always had good relations with them, and I still have. And that's one of the things I put down as, you know, why do I feel good about myself? I think I'm not a bad parent. You know, I'm not such a bad parent. I'm actually a good parent. Obviously, I can be a better. You know, there's always place to improve and so on. You always have areas where you can improve, but. I feel I'm a good parent, and I actually enjoy the children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say, that's one of the things I would have I would have fought for very hard, you know. I would have gone to court if we couldn't agree outside the court. I would have gone to court about that aspect because, you know, with her being in a relationship with another man, you know, with us being married, I can't see how, you know, what example is that? You know, what example do you set to your children if you do that? Mm-hmm. So I would have fought for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I say, that's one of the things that I did read a few books and so on. They say you must never say bad things of your wife in front of your children, but and that's not what I try to do, but I think they also need to realize how you feel and so on. And then I ask them, you know, how do you, because my second boy has a girl that he's interested in, and then I ask him, you know, how would you like it when your girlfriend hangs out with another guy, you know? And then he says, no, he would hate that. You know? And I said, well, that's exactly how I feel when your mom sees this person behind my back. And he says, no, that I realize I would hate that. So I think you don't want to do that, but I think they need to realize how you feel and these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, sorry.
No, I agree with you on that. No, I agree. Like
over the top now. Okay, I'm done talking now for a while.
Well, no, because I got a question for you. it's a real simple one. Is your ex-wife still living with you, or has she moved out yet?
No, she's still here, but I mean, like I say, I try to minimize the contact, you know. I don't want to, like we said before, you don't want to invest in something that is dead, you know. You know, it's like saddling a dead horse. You don't do that, eh? Going nowhere slowly.
Right.
So,
does she have plans to move out though?
Yes. They are busy building she has a little home that they're building for a three bedroom little home. So that
she
can
live. She and this guy are building a home?
No. She's doing that for herself. I don't know if she's going to marry this person, even if I, you know, even if this thing ends. You see, that's the thing. What a mother also, you know, I have a very good relationship with the in-laws. Her mother also told me, look, she's probably never even going to marry this person or what. But she said, when you're in a relationship like that, the grass always seems greener on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Until, because you're not living with that person 24/7. And then you only see, you know, it's easy to put your best foot forward, you know, for some of the time. But you can't do that all of the time. So when you start living with a person 24/7, you actually see them as they really are. And you also realize that they have mistakes and things that irritate you. All their little, habits that irritate you. And then, so I'm not going to put it past that once, you know, we divorced or whatever, she will miss me and whatever, but I think that's going to be too late because I've already made the decision that I mean, she betrayed me. How can I trust her? How she will be able to regain my trust, you know, after doing what she's done. I don't know. To me, it's, you know, she's given me a very, I would say, a deep scar or deep wound. So I don't know if I can ever trust her again. You know, how can I do that? I don't know. You see, that's the one thing about the forgiveness is that, yes, you can forgive somebody, but if they don't realize that what they've done wrong, they will only do it again. You see, if I lend money to somebody, and we agree that they pay it back after a year or so, sometime, and this person doesn't do that, or if he doesn't come back and say, look, I'm going to be late, I want to make arrangements for late payment or whatever, and he just stays away and never talks to you again. Now, after another time, he comes back and says, look, I want to borrow money again from you. Then you won't have the trust in them to do that. Okay?
Right.
You will not trust them. You could have forgiven them, which is fine, but you don't trust them. So, and relationships are built on trust. You cannot, how can you have a relationship or let me rather put it this way. There could be a relationship, but it's not going to be a trusting one. And it will be a very superficial, you know, just like a conversational type of relationship. But I can't see anything more than that going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think, that being said, it's not easy, you know, because this is a person that I thought was going to be my soulmate and my, you know, my the person that I would share the rest of my life with.
Mm-hmm.
I was prepared to invest, you know, the rest of my life with her.
Mm-hmm.
And your life is measured out in time. That's your most precious commodity that you have. You get it for free, but what you spend your time on, that's what you can determine, you know. So I'm not going to spend it with somebody that's going to waste it. I don't want to waste my time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for sharing, Hugo. Would you like to tell us about your week?
My week has been pretty good. I just feel like I'm getting through this. I just feel like I'm making progress. I know I'm not through it completely, but I feel like I'm really starting to move on. That those questions back in the anger chapter. What chapter was that? Yeah, there's questions on page 127. Page 127. I think I'm getting closer to checking off more of those.
Will you point to anything that's allowed you to get closer to checking those off?
I don't know. I just... Well, I think kind of like you said, you know, we have the commodity of time, and it's been given to us freely, and so how do I want to spend it, you know? I don't want to spend it with somebody who doesn't love me, you know, who doesn't care anymore. So, you know, so I need to let go too, because I've got a life to live, you know, and I'm not going to try to make it something it isn't. You know, that whole idea of when the book talks about a love relationship that's dead, you know, that's really helped me a lot to know that, you know, I had this insight this week, and it's not new really, but it led to this insight real strongly one day that what I am wishing for, or what I'm trying to find again, doesn't even exist anymore. It's not there. You know?
Yeah.
It's just not there anymore. So I'm chasing a you know, a cloud. By the time I think I would get to it, it would be changed. It's just not there. So it's an illusion.
No.
You know? And it never, I think I read someplace in the book, you know, that it never will be there again, like it was.
It's gone.
So, you know, why would I spend my time and my energy and my emotions longing and pining for that that doesn't even exist? So,
it sounds like you're doing a great job of moving through the grief, Lillian.
Yeah, I really feel like I am. I don't feel as emotionally connected as I did even a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's good.
Very, very good. Woohoo! Good.
I feel grateful. I really do. I feel grateful. Because I can feel myself growing.
I just imagine you kind of shedding the skin that you were in and emerging.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good image. Yeah, that's a good image.
Well, I know y'all reach out to each other, so I'm not even going to bother asking that question.
No, thanks for the replies and the feedback. You know, it's really good to just know there's somebody that understands what you is happening. So, thanks.
Yeah.
You're very welcome. Yes, it's weird getting divorced. It's weird having, you know, there's just a signature that happens and ta-da, you're done. It's like, what? How's that possible? There's a whole shift that happens in, you know, in your thought pattern. And, you know, that shift brings dynamic emotions with it. Even when, you know, you were kind of at this wonderful steady state beforehand, it still, you know, throws something else in the mix that you weren't quite expecting. And I don't know why that is. It just happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's weird because, you know, this person who you were bound to, who you were together on everything, you shared your life, and now you know, it's, there's nothing. That's weird.
Yeah.
You know? It's weird.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's officially nothing just because somebody signed a paper.
Right.
I don't know. Just that whole signing a paper to make things different is weird to me.
Yeah. Well, when I sign the paper, I go back in my mind and think about all the paperwork we had signed together. You know, adopting the children, buying homes, you know, just all different kinds of things that we signed papers together. And then now we're signing a paper by ourselves to separate from that one you signed with. It's weird. Was the court hearing just kind of, was it quick, Hugo?
Yeah, it was very quick because of the agreement. What happens, obviously, the lawyers, they talk to the judge beforehand, and then, you know, it was just like a formality, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we were not there very long.
Okay. And did you sign the papers right there in the courtroom?
Yes, we did. So things are over. So, look, and I also had the same experience. I mean, I always expected, or not expected, but I know when you're in a relationship and your wife starts threatening with divorce the whole time and whatever, you know, they're using that as a, how can I say, scare tactic, manipulation, that sort of thing. And after so many times, you become blunt to the threats and whatever. And then, but still, even after finding, you know, when you sign the papers and whatever, you don't think that you would feel wounded because of that, but you still feel sad and whatever. So, and because you realize what could have been, you know, and you feel sad about that, and that's it. I still feel that, you know, but let me not go into that. I don't want to go in there anymore. I don't want to think about it anymore. You know, you think about these things and you go there again and you feel sad and all these kind of things, but inevitably you come to the same answer, you know, the whole time. It wouldn't have worked.
What I do when those types of things come up is I just, you know, once I realize that I'm going down that path again, I stop, I smile and kind of laugh at myself and say, I wonder how I wound up on this path, and then probably choose other thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way. Yeah.
Well, what did you guys think of Chapter 11?
I actually liked Chapter 11 because I could write down quite a few things that I like about myself. And find that is very true is that, you know, if you sort of, when you're in this situation with your, at the beginning they say, this person said that he married his wife, but she was becoming like super critical, and that's the way things have been with me, and you actually forget about your own personality and your own creativeness or these kind of things, and that's it made me think a lot because one of my very strong points is being creative, which I like about myself, and this was an issue between me and my wife because you know, when I try to be creative, she would criticize me about that, you know. For instance, I'm the creativeness and the gardening for me goes together. You know, when I I mean, the garden, she would belittle me because of that, you know. And I realized, look, this is not a bad thing, you know. It's actually a good thing. So it was like she was cursing my identity, that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized we were going to divorce, I knew one of the things I read in books and whatever, they said, look, you still have a life left and you need to think about things that you still want to do and whatever. And I realized there's still a lot of things I want to do, you know. And one of the things I realized is I want to do things over here at this house I have and, you know, be creative. Because I always had to, with her, it was very difficult. If you don't give in the whole time to her taste and whatever, then it's a huge fight, you know. You always have to fight about the silliest little decisions. And then, in the end, I just said, no, look, it's not worth it. Let's just keep her happy, you know, because... And in the end, I realized I needed to give up myself, you know, in order to keep her happy, which is not right, you know. You can't do that.
Mm-mm.
And, yeah, so I found the chapter very enlightening.
You're going to have so much fun. You're going to have so much fun.
Yes, I am. I am going to have a lot of fun. And so that's why I had a whole long list of things that I feel good about. But anyway, I actually enjoyed putting the list together. It took me an hour or so. But I really enjoyed putting the list together because it shows me where I can go and, you know, where my strong points are and, you know, things that I like doing and so on, you know. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this chapter. For me, it was a good one. I realized the one I laughed at, the one guy, because apparently he phoned Bruce back and told him, damn it, and it, because it took such a long time to get, and I think if you get in these relationships that, you know, you get totally broken down and whatever, then I can imagine you are not, how can I say, it's very difficult to put a list like this together, but luckily it was a bit easier for me, you know. It took me an hour and a half or so to put the list together.
Would you like to share your list with us?
Yes, I can do that. Yeah, my first point is that I'm creative, and that's one of the things I like. I've already shared this now with you. And then the second one is the gardening thing. Then I like being... I like conversation. You know, I like talking, although I'm a bit of an introvert, I don't, you know, want to be by myself the whole time. So I like when I have a few friends just to have nice discussions and talking, you know. I really enjoy that. Then I think I have a good general knowledge, because I read up quite a lot about things, you know, newspapers, all sorts of things. And something catches my eye, then I I go and read up about that, and that's, I think that's also one of the things that reinforces my, you know, my if you want to talk with somebody about something, it's always nice to have, you know, some interesting topic, things to talk about. And every now and then there's something that catches my eye, and then I get interested in that, and I go into the internet on that, because you inevitably see these things in a newspaper, or when you sometimes when you listen to the news on the radio or whatever, and then you ask yourself, why is it like this, and what, and you quickly go and read up about it, you get, you know, behind the whole story behind it, and so on. And then it's nice to talk about things like that. Then I'm tenacious. I can keep on at something, you know. And if you want to be successful, you have to be able to hold out and keep on doing something until you have success. Because I think that's a key element of success. You have to hold out and keep on, you know, keep on doing something. Then I like learning new things. I don't know why that is, but there's always something new to be learned, and you've never arrived and come to a situation where you know everything. So that's one of the things I like. Then obviously I also enjoy the outdoors, going camping, hiking. To me, that's one of the biggest gifts is nature. And like we said in an earlier session, you know, if you want to do healing, nature is a place to get healed. So, you know, sunrise, sunset, even a stormy night when the lightning flashes and crashes all around you, to me it's awesome and amazing. I really enjoyed that. Once the lightning struck about 20 meters from us, and
oh,
I can assure you that is one of the loudest noises you ever hear, you know, besides A-bomb properly, but, you know, you only hear that once, and then you will never hear that again. But, nature, I love nature and the outdoors. And then I think I'm a good friend. I'm a loyal friend, you know. I think loyalty is one of my big attributes. And I would never let somebody down. And I'm a good supporter. I always supported my wife in whatever she did, you know. Obviously not with her relationship with this person, but because I realized it's wrong. And I obviously told her, but I still think I'm a good friend. I like doing projects. And I think that comes with a new things as well. When I want to do something, and the creativity, I like planning things and then doing them and getting into a working state. And once I'm working there, I'm very satisfied. I really love doing, and at work as well. That's why it fits me like a glove. You know, my work, being creative. That's the other thing, problem solving. I'm very good at solving problems, at complex type of problems. investigations, those kind of things. Because I get to the root cause of the problem, and then once you have the root cause or causes, then you have to decide, do you treat the cause or do you treat the symptoms? Sometimes it's cheaper to treat the symptoms. I mean, you go from there. So, I like being a parent. I think I'm a good parent. Like I said before, I probably am not the best parent in the world, but I'm good at it, but I still learn as I go on. I know I've made a lot of mistakes with my children, but I try not to make mistakes. I like helping other people as well. You know, that's one of the things I enjoy doing. I don't know why. I just like helping other people with whatever. And I like doing designs. I love that because it comes with a creativity, I think. You know, it's things that complement each other. And it helps with the problem solving and the project thing and everything. It all fits together. And, it is. One thing I said here, I can find a way. I'm good at problem solving. If there's a very difficult thing to do, I can do it. And then I'm positive as well. I know, you know, sometimes doing this, I'm a bit of a positive person, or what do they call these guys?
Optimist,
yeah, I'm an optimist. And unless, you know, somebody proves to be treacherous, you know, I will give them the benefit of the doubt, and you know, I'm quite a positive person. I'm also a good listener, although I tend to talk a lot on these sessions with you guys. You will probably not. I do listen. I like listening. Yes, I do. And then I think I also have a good sense of humor. I like probably that comes with a good conversation, and you know, I like cracking jokes with people and so on. It's just nice to do that. And then I'm also passionate about the things that I that's dear to me, my family, my children, and the things that I do. I'm passionate about that, and without that you won't be able to be successful, I think. That's it on my list. I think I've listed 18 things here, but
wow.
I don't want to go on. Sorry.
I think it's a wonderful list.
I'll just be right back.
I love how you saw all the connections between the items on your list. That was really good. So, how do you feel now that you shared your list with us?
No, I feel good because when I went through this list, I see, look, there's a lot of things that you can still live for. There's lots of hope, you know, and I think hope is one of the things that keeps you going, because you can see there's still a life out there, you know. There's a nice life. I still have time, and it's given to me freely, so why sit on a heap and cry the whole time, you know? It's not going to make things better. You know, what do you do with your life? Do you sit and cry, or do you, you know, it's my decision that I can decide what I want to do with that, you know. And it would have been, you know, if I come to the end of my life, it would have been a sad investment to have invested that time in crying. But I think, like we earlier said as well, you do need to mourn. There needs to be a time of mourning, and you have to. Otherwise, you know, you just bury these things, and they will come up later on and sort you out if you don't sort them out, no?
Yes, exactly.
That's great, Hugo. You have a lot of great, good things on your list. What is your work?
I'm a chemical engineer. So I'm in a department where we do what we call plant support. Now that entails the problem solving day to day, but because we have a huge chemical plant here. I work for a company called Fasol. So what we do is we convert coal into hydrocarbons, which are basically fuels, petrol, diesel, jet fuel, lubricants, and then we also have chemicals, you know.
Uh-huh.
We make a large range of chemicals. We make explosives, we make fertilizer, we make propylene, the feedstock for propylene, ethylene, and we produce polypropylene and polyethylene, PVC, those kind of things, plastics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then also things like, look, there's a long list. I can talk the whole night about that. But I'm basically doing plant support and then small projects. I love doing the projects, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That really fits you.
Yeah, it does. It does. That's why I love my job. And that's why I never will be a manager or want to be a manager, because they never get their hands dirty and understand how things work. They just make decisions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I like being on the execution part of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like making history rather than writing it, you know, that sort of thing.
Let's shine the spotlight on you now.
All right. Well,
what did you think of Chapter 11?
I liked Chapter 11. I think it had some great ideas, and I have little sticky notes all over my house with affirmations. I just thought that was a great idea.
What color are your sticky notes?
Yellow.
Okay.
Yellow.
I imagined right then.
And I have them all over the place. They're in the bathroom, the kitchen, the living room, the bedroom, wherever. And I read them out loud every time I pass by. And
fabulous. That's a great practice.
That really, really helps. Yeah. So, and I also liked in there the, not just the affirmations, but the affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've never heard about that, so that you asked, how am I, you know, whatever I'd said. And I really found that a great way to elaborate, you know, about a quality that I think I have and put flesh on it, so to speak. And I really like that. It took me a couple of days to do mine. I have 10, and it took me a couple of days to do them. I would just do a few, and then I would put it down, and then I would come back later, so... I enjoyed the homework. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
So I'll share mine.
So, good.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask you to share them.
Okay. So I wrote, the first one, I am a good listener. I'm very attentive to other people's words and expressions and emotions. I listen well to my clients at work. I'm mindful, focused. I listen to my children and their stories and whatever they want to tell me. So I like listening. I do it all day long. Hugo, I work in mental health, and
okay.
So I listen to people all day long, and I really enjoy. I never tire of it. I become completely absorbed in what the other person is saying, you know, and make sure that they know that they're being heard. I think that's so important.
Okay.
Yeah. The second one I put down is I am organized. I keep track of everything at work and at home, and it's a little scattered and not very neat, but I know where everything is. And then the third one I put is I am understanding of emotions. I think I'm pretty good at being aware of my own feelings. And I'm pretty sensitive to other people's feelings, and I'm not afraid or uncomfortable with expressions of emotion, either my own or somebody else's. The other day I had a client, and she said, I'm sorry I'm crying, and I said, it's okay, I'm comfortable with your tears. You know, you don't have to be, you don't have to hold that. You're allowed to have emotions, and I truly am comfortable with those. Then I put, I'm a good parent and generous with my children, generous with my time and my attention, and my support of their interests. So if something's interesting to them, then I'm interested in it too. And then one that you had, I put, I'm a good friend.
Okay.
And, I you use the word loyal. I would use the word faithful, but I'm a very faithful friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to laugh and be silly with my friends. That's really important to me. I tend to be a little bit on the serious side, and I really like friends that we laugh together. That's so much fun. And then I put, I am good at my job. And I do a lot of teaching, and I'm a great teacher. I've taught many things throughout my life in schools and at the YMCA and at my work now. And I feel like I have a gift of being able to explain things in very simple, clear ways so that people can understand them. I respect what people say, what they share, and try to support their contributions to discussions. You know, whether it's hard to fit it in or not, I try to support it. Then I put, I'm good at managing my depression and anxiety. I struggle with a major depression and generalized anxiety disorder, and I think I really do a great job of using good coping skills and managing my mental health. And I do that seriously. I mean, I take that just as I manage my physical health, I take it very serious that I every day do things to manage my mental health. Then I put, I am brave and courageous. And I mean directly in what I've been going through in the last 2 years and this whole divorce process, grief process. I feel like I'm really brave and courageous in doing that because it has been terrifying, you know, but I'm not giving up. So I recognize that. Then I put, I'm good at taking care of my physical health. I make sure I do all different, checkups and follow-ups and, everything about my physical health. I've had my bone density test, my flu shot, my pneumonia shot, my shingles shot, my eye exam, new glasses. I really stay on top of that. And then I just kind of fits in with some of what you said, Hugo. I'm good at taking care of my home, as far as maintenance and doing things to keep my home nice. I'm kind of creative. I built some window garden, and I built a cold frame, and you should see this spinach coming up on my cold frame. I mean, it's just gobs of spinach. I wish I could have you both, or we'd have a great big spinach salad.
Yeah, you can show us some pictures, right?
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Okay, carry on.
I built a campfire pit in my backyard, and I've got a energy assessment that I had done, so I'm going to make some improvements in to serving energy in my home. Last spring, my basement flooded 5 times, and I tackled it each time and took care of it, and I'm good at taking care of my home. I feel like that. I'm not the best cleaner in the world. I don't clean very frequently, but I'm good at taking care of the maintenance stuff. So those are some of the things that I wrote. I enjoyed this week.
Well, I think that's a fabulous list. I mean, you both have so many beautiful things that you really like and appreciate about yourself as individuals and with respect to your capabilities.
Uh-huh.
And that's a really good thing to be able to recognize both. Not everyone's able to do that, believe it or not. So, Verlan, how do you feel now that you've shared your list with us?
Well, I feel real positive. I feel like it's all true. And it's not in a boastful way. It's just in an honest way. That these are the gifts that I have, and these are the gifts that I use well in my personal life, in my job, in my relationships with my kids.
Well, and I love how you said that you like having the affirmations there as well as when you were doing your affirmations. I think that is so important. As you said, it kind of fleshes them out for you. By fleshing them out, you just make them so much more real and absolute fact.
Right, yeah. I've had my clients write affirmations before, but I'm going to start asking them to write the affirmations, too. I think that's really
Oh, cool.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun when you learn something someplace and then you see how it can apply someplace else, because it means
right.
You've mastered it.
Right.
Well, y'all did so great at putting together your list and sharing your list that it really shows how open you're willing to be, at least in this class. But, as I've come to know y'all over the past few weeks, I'm really of the opinion that this is just who you are. It's not just in this class that you're able to be open, but I think you're able to be fairly open in all facets of your life. And that's really a commendable thing. Despite that, but I think what I'm going to change that to is to enhance that capability that you already have. We're going to talk tonight about masks. and how we have a tendency to wear masks to maybe cover a few things up. So let me read you this essay to kind of help set the stage for what we're going to talk about tonight. And it's called, "Please Hear What I Am Not Saying. Don't be fooled by me. Don't be fooled by the face I wear. I wear a mask. I wear 1,000 masks. Masks that I am afraid to take off. And none of these masks are me. Pretending it is an art that is second nature with me. Don't be fooled, for God's sake. Don't be fooled. I give you the impression that I am secure, that all is sunny and unruffled within me as well as without, that confidence is my name and coolness is my game, that the water is calm and I am in command, and that I need no one. But please don't believe me. My surface may seem smooth, but my surface is my mask, my ever-varying and ever-concealing mask. Beneath lies no smugness, no complacence. Beneath dwells the real me in confusion, in fear, in aloneness. But I hide this. I don't want anybody to know it. I panic at the thought of my weakness and my fear of being exposed. That's why I frantically create a mask to hide behind, a nonchalant, sophisticated facade to help me pretend, to shield me from the glance that knows. But such a glance is what I need, and I know it. That is, if the glance is followed by acceptance, and if it's followed by love. It can help me liberate me from myself, from my own self-built prison walls, from the barriers I feel painstakingly erect. It will assure me of what I can't assure myself, that I'm really something. But I don't tell you this. I don't dare. I'm afraid to. I'm afraid your glance will not be followed by acceptance and love. I'm afraid you'll think less of me, that you'll laugh, just because I'm just no good and reject me. So I play my game, my desperate, pretending game, with a facade of assurance without and with a trembling child within. And so begins my parade of masks, the glittering but empty parade of masks. My life becomes a front. I wildly chatter to you in the suave tones of service talk. I tell you everything that is nothing and nothing that is everything of what's crying inside me. So when I'm going through my routine, do not be fooled by what I'm saying. Please listen carefully and try to hear what I am not saying, what I would like to be able to say, what for survival I need to say, but what I can't. I dislike hiding. Honestly, I dislike the surface game I'm playing, the superficial phony. I'd like to be really genuine and spontaneous, even when that's the last thing I seem to want or need. I can wipe away from my eyes the blank stare of the living dead. I can calm me into aliveness. Each time I'm kind and gentle and encouraging, each time I try to understand me, my heart begins to grow wings. Very small, very feeble wings, but wings. With sensitivity and compassion and the power of understanding, I can breathe life into me. I want to know that. I want to know how important I am, how I find the real person that is inside me if I choose to. I want to choose. Please let me choose. I can break down the wall behind which I tremble. I can remove the mask. I can release me from my lonely prison so others won't pass me by. Please don't pass me by. It may not be easy for me. My long conviction of worthlessness builds strong walls. The nearer I approach the real me, the blinder I may strike back. It's irrational, but despite what books say about a person, I am irrational. I fight against the very thing I cry out for. But I am told that love is stronger than strong walls. And in this lies my hope, my only hope. I will beat down my wall with firm hands, the gentle hands, for my inner child is very sensitive. Who am I, you may wonder? I am someone you know very well. For I am every man and woman you meet. I am the person right in front of you." Mm-hmm. So, what did y'all think of that essay?
Well,
sure. It's actually really sad. And I think that's probably all of us have a mask somewhere. We do have masks.
Yeah. But that Andre made it sound so desperate, didn't it?
Yeah, yes. It's actually a very good... Can we have that?
Yes, you can. Yeah. Add that to my list for tomorrow.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Surely. So... what do you think the mask is? Well?
Funny.
I think it's built because of fear of rejection.
Yeah.
But I think it's related to the self-esteem. Because if you don't have your own inner self-esteem, then you're counting on that from others, and if you can't, if you wear a mask and you're not sure they're going to give you what you need, then you're afraid. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like it's afraid of being yourself because you you are afraid to be rejected, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, then let me throw this one out there at you guys. Can there be positive value to wearing a mask?
Well, I think there are situations where you need to wear a mask. Like at work, you know. I am pretty open with my clients. I mean, I let them know that I struggle with some things the same as they do so that they know that I understand them. At the same time, I don't open myself completely because it wouldn't be appropriate.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think sometimes you have to wear a mask because professionally it's not appropriate to let it all hang out.
Yeah. Or sometimes even tell your boss what you're really thinking.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think, you know, with a, I wouldn't say politicians, but politicians, when they are in the media or what, they like to put the best foot forward, you know, and it's a mask.
Not all of them, but
they try. Yeah. You know, that's the thing, because they want to get the votes and all that. You see, you don't obviously all, and that's why I mean, in marriage, you actually don't want to have a mask because that special person is actually supposed to know the deepest of your fears and your desires and your dreams, and you don't want to have a mask with your, well, you say mask, you don't want to have a mask with your, you know, with somebody who is supposed to be your best friend or and your soulmate. You know, because you actually want to feel safe with him. And I think once they start hurting you, then you start putting on a mask or a mask because you're not feeling safe with him. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that contributes to divorce is because you don't know this person anymore. You know, why does... You know, obviously, we both put on masks or whatever. I don't know, you know. But obviously, I think I started doing putting on a mask after... you know, when you start getting hurt, you see this thing is not working that I'm doing. So I need to do something else. You start hiding yourself, you know, and because I don't want to get hurt the whole time, and then you, because it doesn't work what I'm doing, so I need to do something else, that sort of thing. And because if you can't be yourself, you know, it's not nice. You don't end up being truthful to your, you know, your own creation, your own identity, you know. Like living a lie the whole time. I don't want to do that. It's not it's effort. It's a lot of effort. And why do you want to do that? For what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Living a lie is not helpful. I don't know how else to say it than that. I mean, it's just, it's a recipe for misery.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
So, I can think of one other situation where a mask might be appropriate. What do you think about wearing a mask in parenting?
I think it could be appropriate. I'm not very good at it. That's why I'm laughing, because, yes, I think that there are times when it would be better for the children to wear a mask, but I don't do that very well. I have not done that very well. I'm kind of an open book, you know. And, you know, what you see is what you get. I don't think I wear masks very often, you know. If I'm anywhere and I need to express an emotion, I do. But, except at work. But I think there might be an appropriate time to do that with your children, but I have utterly failed at wearing masks with my children.
What do you think, Hugo?
I think you should have, like boundaries or whatever with your children. And, I mean, you're not going to share absolutely everything with them, you know. Because I think you want to influence your children in the best way you possibly can, okay? And I'm not saying that you need to lie to them or things like that, but there's simply things that you're not going to tell them, and or until they are capable of handling it, you know, that sort of thing. So, yes, I think it is appropriate, and like I say, possibly the person that you should wear the least of masks is with your spouse, you know, because
yeah.
You know each other, you should be able to know each other intimately, you know, and you don't have that type of relationship. I mean, you can't be in that way with everybody. You can only be that person with your spouse. And so with all the rest of the people, your family and whoever, you should actually have a mask, you know. But in a good way. I'm not trying to say you shouldn't be there. But you're not going to share everything, every little detail of your life with everybody. To me, it's not right. That's what your wife is there for, or your spouse, you know?
Good point.
For instance, if I know that I have a problem at work. Let me just create an example. If there is a problem at work, or if there is bad economic conditions, and I might get laid down or whatever, I'm not going to share that with my children, and you know, create fear in them. That, you know, you don't want to do that. So you don't want. So I'm not hiding it, but I'm not sharing it with them too, but I'd rather share that with my friends at work, you know, or with, obviously you share that with your wife, with your spouse, and whatever, but you don't want to to instill fear or whatever. Why do you want to trouble your children with that? They should be children, you know? So that's why I'm saying yes. There are appropriate masks or masks that you that you should wear, and which is good. So it's not all bad, but it's a tool that can be used. But like I say, if me and my wife start wearing masks, I mean it's not, the relationship's not worth it anymore.
Well, I have an example. I wear a mask with my mom. You know, she's 91 years old, and I have worn a mask the last 2 years. I mean, she knows that I have divorced my partner, that we got a divorce, but I haven't let her see my grief. I pretend like it's not there because I don't want her to suffer. She'd worry to death. And she doesn't need to do that. But consequently, it's made us not very close. You know, but I'm doing it to protect her. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but I also don't want her to get mad at my ex in her heart. You know what I'm saying? And she would, because she loved me, she would get mad at her, and I don't want that to happen. So I don't want her to have that kind of anger or that kind of hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I'm hoping for you, Verlaine, is that as you continue to make these giant leaps and bounds towards completely healing from your divorce, that you'll be able to be closer to your mom again.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because you really have come a tremendously long way since we started this class.
Right.
You really have done a lot of great work.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and that's one of the things Karen, that I think that's difficult, because I think, you know, when people care about you, especially your close family and friends, and you start talking about them, about the divorce, they all tend to give you all sorts of different advice and whatever. And, and it's not always the best advice. But I think they mean well, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, just, and so sometimes it's good to have, and obviously some of them interact with your spouse or your ex or whatever, and then, I mean, it's also not good for the relationship, the future relationship between the two of you. So I tend to agree with Verlaine on this, is that, you know, you want to get, if I want to talk to somebody about my wife, I don't want to talk to my near family and friends about that, because I might be in a emotional moment or whatever and say the wrong things. And then, you end up stirring emotions where you actually shouldn't have. You know, and then afterwards, you feel actually bad about it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, but okay, yeah.
No, very valid point. I mean, so what you guys are bringing up is that, you know, masks do have tremendous positive value, not just for protecting yourself, but for protecting others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That doesn't mean that they're any easier to wear, right? Because I do take a toll, you know. Verlan, you said, you know, it made you not as close to your mom by wearing your mask, right? And that's a big toll.
Yeah. And when when you get angry at your boss, you cannot cuss him out there in the office, whatever. You wait until he's gone. And then you can cuss as much as you like, that sort of thing.
If I'm here, if I'm there, yes. Well, there's a tool, and Verlan, I'm going to be very curious to know if you've heard of this tool, called a Johari window. Have you heard of it, Verlan?
I have,
Okay, am I saying it right?
I think so.
Okay, because I've never heard anybody say this word before.
Well, that's the way I say it.
Okay, all right. This tool came about from group dynamics research, and it was developed by and named after the two guys, Joseph Luft and Harry Ingram. So if I look at just a concatenation of their names, it should be Joe Harry, but that just sounds really weird. So I prefer the Johari pronunciation. So, Hugo, have you heard of this before, a Johari window?
Yes, I've heard of it, yes.
Oh, good. So this is going to be easy for you guys then. Okay, so as you know, it has four different panes, right? The open or known self, the hidden self, the blind self, and the unknown self. And they each have to do with whether or not you know something about yourself and whether or not other people know something about you, right? So the top row are things that you know about yourself, right? The bottom row is things that you don't know about yourself. The right column, the right column is what others do not know about us, and the left column is what others do know about us, right? So it's pretty straightforward there. Are y'all really comfortable with it, or would you like for me to give you examples?
No, I'm comfortable.
I'm fine.
How about you? You're fine? Okay, then I won't even bother with the examples. Let's go back here. So what are the benefits to being open? You know, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, potential benefits of wearing a mask, but what are benefits of being open?
I think it's less effort, right? It's a lot less effort, you know? So if you can be open with someone, it's like a lot less effort than, you know, trying to keep track of what I said to this guy and what I didn't say to another guy, that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
How do you keep track of all, how can I say, your lies or your things that you've not, you know, not said, that sort of thing? The things that you've hidden and exposed, to whom have you hidden, to whom have you exposed, whatever, it's difficult. It's like, you know, like, I don't know, what kind of animal can do shifts, what do they call it, shape-shifting? It's very difficult.
Well, a chameleon kind of does, is closer to that.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But, you know, what you're talking about, it reminds me of a saying. It's when, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what you're doing is you inevitably you're setting a trap for yourself. You know, to get caught in later on.
Well, I think if you wear a mask, that was the original question.
No, what are the benefits of being open?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the benefits too is you create the possibility for a true relationship to develop.
Yeah.
Ah, that's beautiful. Yep, I like that one a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, there's no possibility.
Yeah. What else might be a benefit of being open?
I think it will be easier for other people, yeah, but that has to do with the relationship thing, like you just said.
Well, the only other thing I thought of actually ties into the relationship piece, too, and it's that trust increases.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but that's,
for sure.
You know, that kind of has to be there for a relationship to happen. So
yes.
It's kind of a fuzzy line, but I called it out anyway when I thought about it. I have a kitty dancing on my nose, so let me move him. So, you know, normally I spend a lot of time, you know, asking people to share different pieces, you know, of this to make sure they really got it. But since both of you all are really comfortable with the Johari window, I'll just kind of briefly review some of the principles to keep in mind, you know, when you're looking at one. So a change in one area is going to affect the other areas, right? So if you self-disclose something else about yourself, the hidden area is going to become smaller and the open area is going to become bigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody shares something with you that you weren't aware of about yourself, then your blind area, your unknown area, your blind area is going to become smaller and your open area becomes bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and both of these. Well, and both of these make your unknown area smaller, then, also.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because the unknown area is unknown to both you and to others.
Okay.
The unknown area is where you and others actually have the chance to discover more things about you.
Okay.
And so you can think of it as the whole journey of self-discovery.
Okay.
And you may find yourself, you know, in different situations where you discover things about yourself that you didn't know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, or would you like an example?
Well, give an example of that, would you?
Yeah.
Because I'm getting tired.
Yeah, okay, let me give you guys a quick example. Several years ago, Jim and I were trying to get pregnant. And I was, I think I was 42 at the time. And, you know, it wasn't happening. So we went to the doctor to find out what's going on. And turned out all my plumbing was just fine. Because Jim's little guys like to chase their own tails instead of doing anything else, so they swam in circles. And I don't know how he managed to have three kids, but he did. And it just wasn't working for us. So, you know, we decided what we were going to do is we were going to go with some in vitro fertilization. And, you know, they said, well, you know, basically I was going to be a senior mother. No, actually the word they used was geriatric. I was going to be a geriatric mother. And I said, oh, my God, I'm 42. Come on, give me a break. But that's the language that they use. And they said, here, you know, you're going to have to take these hormones, you know, to get yourself ready so you can, you know, harvest the eggs and then fertilize them, you know, and do all that stuff. And then you're going to have to come back with this filled out paperwork. And I decided that I'd just start taking the pills and do the paperwork, you know, afterwards. And I started reading through the paperwork. And it turned out that any of the fertilized eggs that we did not choose to use would either be destroyed or used for training purposes. And I lost it. It was at that moment that I realized I had a belief in life at conception. And so that was something that was completely unknown to me and anybody else. But I was put in a situation where I had to really face it, and there it was.
Well,
yeah. So did that make sense, how that was kind of unknown and then...
Yeah. Oh. The things we don't know about ourselves, and neither does anybody else. Yeah.
Okay. So, any other questions about, you know, how the size of the areas change, or an example for any of the areas you guys would like?
No, I think I'm fine.
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. So then, just more important principles. The next one is, which you guys already hit on right away, it takes emotional energy to keep feelings and motivations hidden or denied, right? Threatening feelings and situations tend to decrease openness and awareness. Trusting situations and feelings tend to increase openness and awareness. So I'm guessing that the comfort level that you have in sharing on the phone now is much greater than it was the very first time we met.
Yeah.
And that's because...
I just want to share something here.
Yeah.
When I realized my wife was in this sort of relationship with this person. When I see this, obviously this is threatening to our marriage. And that definitely, I can say, decreased my openness, you know, to be willing to try. I mean, if you realize that, you know, this is happening, firstly, I mean, you do have this. Exactly this what we see here. You feel threatened, and then you want to decrease your openness, and, you know, with her, for sure.
Yeah.
This is exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how we can take these very basic templates. I mean, you know, it's a square of four squares, right? It looks just like a window with some mullions in it. And yet, we can easily lay on so much information into such a simple framework that it makes it easier to talk about a lot of things that we go through. The next principle is that forcing openness, awareness, or exposing someone is really undesirable and usually ineffective. So, gosh, maybe 20 years ago, it was kind of in vogue to have an intervention, like where you confront a loved one about their behavior in some way. You know, usually it was an addiction. And expect them to be thankful and, you know, graciously agree to go get help. And most of the time, they weren't very successful because those folks were being forced into an openness and awareness and being exposed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I mean, obviously when, what do you think, what do you say, when somebody's operating, it's like somebody's operating in the darkness and now you put a light on them. They don't like that. They're not going to like it.
Too bright.
Yeah. Because they don't want people to know what they are doing. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. The next one, it says that openness and free activity are helpful because more of one's resources and skills can be used, right? So it's kind of the flip side of it. It takes a lot of energy to keep things hidden. Well, now all of a sudden you've got more energy. So more things can happen that are positive.
Yeah.
There's almost a universal curiosity about the blind portion, or the completely unknown portion of our personality, right? And that's why things like astrology and psychics, right, are so appealing to so many people, because we think that maybe they can enlighten us about ourselves.
Yeah. Going to a fortune teller or somebody like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The next one says that the size and areas may change in response to circumstances. So, for example, when you're experiencing grief, not that anyone here on the phone call has ever experienced grief recently or anything, the open area may decrease in size until you've worked through the grief process.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, you don't want to share your grief with everybody, right? You
right.
You don't want that.
It's just, you know, the grief in and of itself takes so much energy to experience and manage. That then allowing things to come off to be more open is just difficult. It's just very, very difficult. You got so much energy, you know, sunk into the grief process or, you know, a trauma or a drama, you know, in general. So it is really hard to be open at that, in that time. And yet, both of you were able to do that because you both reached out to me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That brings me right back to one of the things on Verlaine's list of being courageous and brave.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad I heard from you, Verlaine. I was afraid you fell asleep.
No, almost.
No, all this stuff.
No, just because it's getting late.
No. Okay, let me hurry. Okay, so I think I'm going to skip this next slide of which of the pains might require you to wear a mask. I'll just tell you, you know, the answer, of course, is number 2, the hidden self, right? Because that's where you're going to be wearing a mask, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think you all know what the masks are that people wear, and the book's going to give you some more examples of that. So let's jump into the homework. Still course calls, but I haven't changed that for you guys yet. Okay, so a contact with your classmates, journal if you've been doing that, and then the big piece is identify one mask you've been wearing that you'd be willing to share with us next week, it may or may not be a mask that you're using with us, right? If it is a mask that you've been using within the group, then you'll probably experience more of a sensation of opening up than if it's a mask that you just use outside of the group, if that makes sense. But
yeah.
It's completely up to you.
Okay.
And then it's chapter 13 is the one that you read.
Yeah.
Any questions about the homework?
No.
No problem.
Okay, good. Then we have a serenity prayer, a moment of gratitude. So here's the prayer. God, grant me
the serenity
to accept the
things I cannot change.
The courage
to change the things I can't.
And the wisdom.
The wisdom to know the difference.
I just love that poem. I don't know if you guys like it as much as I do.
Very good.
Sends a light right back on me every time I say it. How about the moment of gratitude?
Yes, I am very grateful for, in this week, for realizing that I have so many things that I can look forward to. I'm very grateful for having you guys that's with me through this process, as somebody that I can touch base with and thanks, Karen. I think you're guiding us excellently, and Berlin, thanks for all your the views that you have on it's very enlightening to see the way you tackle things. It gives me hope as well to see when I see you working through things and the way you I wouldn't say improve, but the way your stuff is developed, I'm very grateful for that. And I'm very grateful for not being alone in this process. It helps me a lot, eh?
Yeah. Thank you. Would you like to go next?
Sure. I think that I just want to echo what Hugo said about grateful that I don't have to go through this process a lot anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm especially grateful for all the wonderful rain that we've been getting this week. I'm grateful that Verlaine's bed is calling to her so loudly because it means she's going to get a good night's sleep tonight.
I'm grateful that I'm here and I get to go to sleep and I'm not where you go is and have to stay up.
And I'm grateful that Hugo gets to see one of his favorite things, the sunrise. And just go
right.
If it's not already rising.
Yeah.
And of course, as always, I'm thankful for all the effort you guys put into this each and every week. I don't know if it feels as wonderful as it is to me to observe all the progress you guys have made, but I tell you, you just bring such smiles to my face every time I think about the two of you and how much you've covered and explored and opened up with during these 6 weeks. So thank you for sharing all that.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for that, Karen. No, I think, you know, when I called you first, Nat, I didn't know how to tackle this whole thing. I only knew that I didn't know how to do this. And I had to find somebody that that's done this before, that would be able to guide us or to guide me. And I can just say thanks. You're doing an excellent job, and thanks for that, Karen.
I was the same place as you, Hugo. I was the same place. It's like I just don't know what else to do. I'm stuck. I need to have something. And then I found Karen on the website by chance.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was chance. I think it was the universe or something. The energy was moving, and I found you. And, yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Well, yay, Ash, we're the Three Musketeers. We got each other's backs. It's all good. When somebody's hurt, we run to the rescue.
Right.
Well, my friends, I think I need to kick Verlaine off the phone so she can go to bed.
All right. Good night, Karen. Good night, Hugo.
Good night.
Next week. I can't wait. All right. Bye-bye.
Good.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care of yourself, Hugo.
Okay, Karen. Have a good trip. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.